Today on Movie Wallows, join us as we attend Tribeca Film Festival 2016. It's time for Movie Wallows. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And ESG as well.
Movie Wallows is your daily dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. And yes, this is a daily, hopefully. We're going to try and do this. We are attending the New York Tribeca Film Festival 2016 for our second... Well, actually, it's a third year covering it on Movie Wallows. ESG, you went alone a couple of years ago.
In 2014,
you twisted our arms. And we joyfully came along last year, had a fantastic time and did some live podcasting. And
we are back.
Yes.
We're back for year number three of coverage. So it's kind of an exciting one. There is so much good stuff here. It's overwhelming. We're only going to be able to cover the first week of the festival. It runs for about 2 weeks here in New York. Tons and tons of stuff. So if you're in the area, or even if you're not in the area, get here. There is so much for movie
Very
fans.
Worth it.
And not just movies, but there also have, as we've talked in a previous podcast, there's some really good one-on-one talks scheduled with directors, actors, television personalities, etc. And those are already sold out. I mean, we ourselves are trying desperately to get into one tomorrow evening, and it seems we won't be able to. So it's all quite hot and it's all happening. And so if you're in the New York Tri-Cities area, come on down.
And if we find ourselves with a spare minute, I really want to go and check out the VR stuff, because virtual reality is kind of the big thing this year. And the film festival has a whole area dedicated to VR experiences, and especially VR narrative experiences, because there's a lot of things that you can do with VR in the field of gaming or, 3D spaces. But this is... from what I can tell from some of the press material, going to be, VR narrative, where, using virtual reality, one of these goggles, to immerse you in an environment and then tell a story while you're in that environment, I think is going to be so exciting for a nerd like me.
Be interesting to see if a movie goes that way. Then you're sitting in a cinema with everyone nodding their heads. And
it creates all sorts of problems. I mean, I think Hardcore Henry is out, yes. And that's a very much a first person movie. We haven't reviewed that or seen that yet. But the director has already gone on the record to say that he wants to make the sequel in virtual reality, where, it'll take you through the experience, but you can look around, and that's going to bring its own challenges.
I have absolutely no doubt that is the future of cinema.
I want that.
Because, can you imagine how great it would be to market a movie saying, every time you see it, it's not going to be the same, because you literally, depending on where your head is turned, you're seeing a different thing at every minute that you're watching the movie. So, you could keep going back.
And not to get too deep into it, I mean, I think that's going to bring its own directorial challenges, because if there's some kind of critical plot element that happens to be in the opposite direction that you're looking, it's going to be problematic. So I think, but anyway, I want that. It's something that I think they have recognized is potentially a big thing for movies in the future. So come check that out. But anyway, this is day one. So the format of Tribeca allows us to get into the press and industry screenings, which happen a lot of the time ahead of the actual scheduled
public
movies.
Screenings.
So if you're following Movie Wallows and you are interested in any of these movies, do check out the Tribeca schedule, because unlike a lot of film festivals, when we talk about a film, you haven't already missed it. You get the chance to see some of this stuff, so make sure that you check it out if you're at all interested.
And some of them are showing multiple times throughout the week, so even if you missed the screening initially, there will be screenings of them later through the week as well.
Yeah, and we did not ease into this, right? So I know the two of you on day
jumped
one
in with both feet.
Jumped in with both feet and saw five movies, and we are here to talk about all five of those movies. So should we jump right in?
Yeah, let's get started, because there's a lot to cover.
Okay, so the first movie is, very appropriately, it's called First Monday in May. And this is a documentary directed by Andrew Rossi. And according to the book here, it follows the creation of the Metropolitan Museum of Art's China Through the Looking Glass exhibition, by curator Andrew Bolton. And with unprecedented access, director Andrew Rossi captures the collision of high fashion and celebrity at the Met Gala and dives into the debate about whether fashion should be viewed as art. This is a documentary. I know, Rashmi, you saw it, and Joe, you saw it as well.
I did, yeah.
I flew in late today, so I missed the first two movies, but I'm eager to hear. This is a question on many people's minds through the ages. Should it join the ranks of poetry and sculpture and painting and cinema as art?
Okay, so if you like fashion, this is a must-see. But even if you don't like fashion, this is a documentary about an iconic place. It's about iconic people. And this is an iconic event, the Met Gala Ball, which happens the first Monday of every May, hence the title. I mean, I love fashion, and I just thought this was a visual feast for the eyes. This was beautiful to watch. This film really excited me, and it made my heart sing as I was watching it because it was just so beautiful to watch. I keep saying that word, beautiful. You know, there's a line in the film that says, people underestimate the strength of clothing to tell a story, and I fear that people will read the description of this documentary and fear watching it, but please don't be feared. This is a must-see documentary. I love this.
And, you know, if any of you have seen our Instagram account on Facebook, you'll probably know that I have no interest in fashion whatsoever. But no, this movie drew me into its world as well. I mean, it's a terrifically made documentary. It's not unlike the September issue from a couple mm-hmm. of years ago, which, you know, lives and exists in a very similar world. It's the world of fashion, Anna Wintour, Vogue. But yeah, this was a very well-made film. I mean, in terms of documentary filmmaking, it has a story. It follows the preparation of this Met Gala, which I'd never heard of before. Again, I don't follow fashion. But, you know, there's lots of interesting viewpoints and perspectives. And I think, you know, it's not too heavy-handed in terms of trying to drive its message of, you know, can fashion be art? But I think it makes a case for that, which again, like all good documentaries, I think they present you with some information and then let you, you know, lead you towards a conclusion perhaps, but this one is not so heavy-handed. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, 2014, it's actually documenting the 2014 Met Gala Ball. And unlike Joe, I do follow fashion and I'm not fashionable, but I love fashion. And I think what's interesting, this was about the China through the looking glass year. And what I loved about it was I felt like I got educated about Chinese fashion, but about Chinese lifestyle as well as the politics. And I think that the central character, Andrew Bolton, who is the senior curator for the costume department of the Metropolitan Museum of Art, it's as much about him and his quirkiness and the fact that he wears his trousers too short on purpose. Just very interesting. It's about passionate people who are perfectionists. And just to see Anna Wintour in a pair of jeans moving furniture was worth it.
I mean, you know, the one thing that I think the movie did very well was it works for the uninitiated as well, because there is a part of the movie early on where they talk about Alexander McQueen and the impact that he had on the world of fashion and the impact that he had on the world of art as fashion. So it kind of introduces the topic and brings you into some of the discussions that are, you know, that occur kind of later on through the movie. So yeah, this was terrific. There's so many famous faces and names in this. Baz Luhrmann has a huge part. John Galliano, the fashion designer, all the people that who are involved in this particular exhibition. Wong Kar-wai, who famously directed In the Mood for Love, you know, he was brought in to do this exhibition. So this is just a really, really well made documentary about something that, you know, I personally thought would be uninteresting, but ended up being fascinating.
Do you think this will get a commercial release?
I think it will, yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah, it very much feels like, I'm not sure what this filmmaker has done before, but if you've ever seen like the documentaries around the New York Times, mm-hmm. The photographer, there was a wonderful one.
Bill Cunningham,
who did Iris.
It has that same kind of feel to it. So this is a very well-made, very accessible, very enjoyable documentary.
Okay.
Brilliant.
Terrific stuff.
So from the first Monday, we go to the Meddler. which is the second movie that, again, Joe and Rashmi, you saw. And this movie is directed by Laureen Scafaria, who I believe previously directed a movie that not too many people like, but which I have a fondness for, which is Seeking a Friend for the End of the World. And I believe this movie is actually getting commercially released in a couple of weeks because I've been seeing previews for it. And so it's good to see it show up at Tribeca as well. And again, this is what the Tribeca summary states, that Susan Sarandon delivers a magnetic performance as the doting mother supreme, Marnie Miniverny, who crosses coast to drop into the life of her screenwriter daughter, played by Rose Byrne. Loosely autobiographical, Laureen Scafaria's heartfelt comedy offers a wryly scripted defense of a woman struggling to cope with a familial loss. It co-stars J.K. Simmons, Cicely Strong, Jared Carmichael, and Jason Ritter. This is a movie I do want to see, and again, I know it's going to be released commercially in a couple of weeks, but having seen it a few weeks early, what are your thoughts on it, Joe?
You know, this is a very enjoyable movie. I don't rate it, you know, up there in terms of, you know, comedies of the year or anything like that, but... you know, the movie is very, very well intentioned. I felt like it was almost a portrait of, you know, when you think of like the stereotypical Jewish mother, and that the movie doesn't necessarily ascribe religion to the character, but she, you know, when you think about the Jewish mother who is just into everything, everyone's lives, very much a busybody. This is, you know, a kind of a character that's like that, but also endearing in part because of Susan Sarandon's performance. The side roles by J.K. Simmons and Rose Byrne were very well done. Yeah, there's a couple of script problems here and there, so, you know, I don't want to nitpick too much, but I think some of the dialogue was a little clunky in places, but nonetheless, a very enjoyable movie.
Yeah, definitely a movie of two halves for me. I mean, I actually wrote in my notes the 45-minute mark. You know, this is a good script. It's a good story. It's got good acting, but I didn't connect with it. And then just as I wrote that, suddenly there was a change in tone and it really, really made a bigger impact on me for that second half. And I really felt emotionally connected to it, which was completely missing in the first half. I mean, this is a really fun Friday night movie, I would say. Somewhat of a chick flick, I think, bordering on a chick flick maybe, but very nice, very harmless fun.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, not wanting to be overly critical of the movie, I think the characters veer into kind of caricature at times, and I think, you know, the dialogue is rescued by some really great performances. Rose Byrne is able to sell everything that you see her character going through, which at times is a lot compressed into, you know, there's a section in the movie where, you know, it's a period of about a half a day, but she goes through this entire emotional arc, which is almost unbelievable, but for the fact that she's such a remarkable actress that it, you know, I was convinced. So
yeah,
it worked in spite of its clunkiness.
Yeah, and Susan Sarandon is practically in every single scene and delivers in every scene. And a lovely underrated performance by J.K. Simmons. And underrated in the sense that it's hard to do that without overacting, and he plays it right on the money. For me, it really opens up, I think, in that second half into a very sweet movie that gets under your skin. And I think really it's because it becomes a bit more honest about what it is, and I think that's about... losing, loss, and grief.
And there are some great jokes in this movie. I mean,
yeah, very funny.
A couple of real laugh out loud moments. Not, you know, not slapstick, but just genuine, insightful humor. And I always enjoy that kind of thing.
I mean, J.K. Simmons is not somebody who gets called to play understated. In fact, he gets called always for roles which are overstated. So it's good for him to be playing against type. And, you know, Sarandon gets a lot of press for, you know, all her political statements and so forth. And she's won her Oscar and people have kind of moved on from her. But I think, you know, time will really hold her up very well as one of the great screen presences. You know, she's had quite a career. She needs to be celebrated.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on to movie number three.
Okay, so movie number three today was The Family Fang, and Yazdi joined us for this one. So this is actually directed by Jason Bateman, and I was excited to see this one because it stars Nicole Kidman and Jason Bateman, who are Annie and Baxter Fang. They're children of celebrated performance artists Caleb and Camille Fang, who are played by Christopher Walken and Marianne Plunkett. And when the elder Fangs go missing under mysterious circumstances, the siblings are forced to unpack long, dormant, and unresolved issues from their unorthodox childhoods as they search for their parents in Bateman's caustically funny and deeply felt sophomore feature. So, Yazdi, why don't you tell us what you thought of this one?
So, Jason Bateman is inherently somebody I like a lot. And I know his first directorial movie, which came out a couple years ago, I think was really underappreciated. It was a movie called Bad Words. I thought it was really got a bad deal at the box office and people should seek it out. And then, you know, he was so good as recently as in the movie The Gift last year, if you remember him in a very difficult, very slippery good. Role.
Yes.
And here he's directing a movie which I think is very different from Bad Words in tone and structure. There is something very precious about the whole story. This is a very unusual story about this couple, father and mother, who they are performance artists. They like to create these elaborate pranks and they involve the little kids to do it. And then the story follows what happens when the kids get older. So there is something very unusual about the plot, about the structure. I haven't quite seen it, so I really enjoyed it. The performances felt lived in, but at the same time, because it's so plotty, it also felt a little bit contrived to me.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good summary, Yazdi. I think the movie was a little too ambitious in terms of where it wanted the story to go, and ambitious in the sense of plausibility, ultimately, for mm-hmm. me. I think the revelations as the movie goes on start to increase in magnitude and amplitude, and as a moviegoer, you then start to think, oh, you know, this time frame doesn't quite fit for me. The way that the kind of the onion peels and reveals what's really been going on is, and I hope that's not even too much of a spoiler, but it was good. I thought overall though, it was very effective. Again, another movie where I think the performances really work. Nicole Kidman in here was really very good, and she had a difficult role here to play.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of the movie revolves around, you know, her specific reactions to certain things, and she did a very good job of carrying that.
Yeah, normally she's someone I want to slap, but I actually thought she did a very good job in this movie. I think you guys have said everything. I think I would add that in addition to being an unusual movie, it's kind of quirky and odd. And I think it's for that fact that it is an unusual structure. There isn't the traditional arc that we see. But Jason Bateman reminds us again that he is an absolute chameleon. He is a diverse and great actor. I love watching him on screen. I think this is an example of really good casting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Christopher Walken. Wow.
Yeah, Catherine Hahn.
Few scenes, yeah.
Exactly. Just really, really good. I think overall this was a really enjoyable movie just because it was so different. Very interesting, really, really unusual idea. And I think I agree that everything seemed to be tied up very conveniently, but still very enjoyable.
Yeah, I mean, there are a few meta things. I think there is a piece of dialogue in the movie where they say, you know, Jason Bateman's supposed to be a writer, and his first book is very celebrated, and he says, well, you know, the second one, you know, the sophomore one is always a little bit weird and a little bit off, and the third one will be better. And in a way, it was almost Jason Bateman apologizing for this movie, because I think even as he's starring and directing in it, he realizes that this movie has a very off-kilter structure, and that it may not, you know, resonate for everyone. But I think this movie should be given props for the ambition of it. That's what I think, that's the word you used. It is very ambitious to take on this story. There's almost something carnivalesque about this movie. I don't know. The plot seems kind of...
You know, it reminds me of the Nolan movie, you know, the one about the magicians in some ways.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's tough. The sell here is a really hard one. And I think given the level of difficulty, he's done a very good job of directing it. Yeah. I don't know that the direction is the issue. I think it's just the overall complexity and
the story,
depth and ambition of what they're trying to sell us here.
Yeah, and the time switches.
Mm.
There's a lot going on. And I think But what I will give it props for is I think it got that brother-sister relationship really well mm-hmm. between Nicole Kidman and Jason Bateman. I really enjoyed that. And it reminded me a little bit of the Skeleton Twins, which I know, Yaz, you loved. I really loved enjoyed movie, it, but yeah. I know you loved that one.
Because we seldom see movies which are only about a brother and a sister or that relationship being the central relationship in a movie.
Yeah.
And again, I would not have, if I was reading this script, I would not have had in 100 years thought of Nicole Kidman to play that the role of his sister. But you know, she's picked for it, and she does wonders with it.
Yeah, no,
so. it's a kind of a darkly comical movie, but still, I mean, just to be clear, because we've said a lot of things, but I think it's still a recommendation from me. I think you know,
yeah,
the movie is definitely one that I would tell people to go see.
Yeah, yeah. I think most people would enjoy it.
Yeah,
because bit of a thriller-y.
Yeah, it has a little bit of a whodunit kind of
correct.
Thing, you know,
you won't believe it, but that's the exact word that I wrote
really?
Down in my notes. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, so it's fine. It's a fun movie. People should check it out when it opens. The Family Fang.
Okay, and then we went on to Mother, which is an Estonian foreign language movie.
Thank you. Yes, it's exactly the way to describe this particular movie. There's not a lot more to kind of describe it. I mean, it's real. Its original name is Emma. I think that means mother in Estonian. It's not a language that I have any familiarity with at all. I think it's probably my first ever Estonian movie that I've seen. So, this movie is described as a darkly comic crime mystery set in small town Estonia. And it centers on a woman by the name of Elsa, who is a mother and full-time caretaker of Lowry, a teacher who has been in a coma since being shot under shadowy circumstances. So, it's a movie that was shot and released this year, 89 minutes length. So, guys, what did you think of Mother?
I really like this movie. This is, again, another really unusual subject matter that we don't necessarily see a lot of. On the outset, it's about a mother, you know, caring for her comatose son. But I would describe this as a painfully tragic movie that's done in a non-manipulative manner. This could have so easily have manipulated us as an audience, but it doesn't. And I love the way that it explores how people behave when they think no one's watching or listening.
Yeah, I mean, I really like this movie too. I recommend it. I hope the fact that it's an Estonian movie does not stop it, at least from being released, you know, on the foreign film circuit within the US. The lead actor who plays the mother, she's so good, and she has such a difficult role, and I don't want to give anything away. But
yeah, how do you act that?
Yeah, how do you act that even? And I think in many ways, the movie is like a stage play. The most of the movie is set in this house, and I would even say within this room, within the house, and these different characters come and visit this comatose son. All the different characters in the town come and visit. And by virtue of their interaction with this comatose person, you kind of find out more about all the underlying relationships that are present here. And I think the other thing which I really liked about the movie is that it kind of makes such good use of this premise, which you seldom see being used in movies, which is it's a simple premise that the son, before he was shot and who is now comatose, you know, withdrew a large sum of money, and everybody's convinced, and I'm not giving anything major away, but everybody's convinced that that money is hidden somewhere in his room. And, you know, several of those characters are trying to find this money. And I think a lot of the movie is kind of pivoted around how are they going to, where in your house can you possibly hide a large sum of money? So I like that little cat and mouse piece to it. And then I like the ending of the movie as well, because it kind of really turns things around. So it's I must confess, this was at a time when my jet lag was kicking in big time. So I did miss out on a few parts of the movie, but I still have great, great admiration for it.
Yeah, this was expertly constructed and directed. The movie, I think for me, just had these little moments of brilliance. The like you say, Yazdi, a lot of it was was non-verbal in the sense of when you look at these characters' behaviors and they go around and they, you know, their behaviors are so, you know, when they're in the room looking for things, when they're interacting non-verbally with the comatose patient, but also verbally, it was just really, really well constructed and that the direction had been given a lot of thought. For example, the stage play analogy is a good one, but for example, every time somebody shows up at the house, we see it through the same curtain, through the same window. And so it enters almost into, you know, and so then the policeman arrived. And so it reads like one of these
fables,
old kind of crime fables. It was just really, really wonderfully done. I'm babbling a little bit because there was so much in here that I felt like I hadn't seen before. It feels very, very original to me.
Very original. I love the kind of film. I love the subject matter.
It presented itself almost as something new. And I love when that happens, when you go in without expectations and you see something that you just feel like you haven't seen before. So yeah, again, so many moments, so many characters, each character was wonderfully constructed. Even when you think about, you know, the husband who didn't have much of a role in the house, but you knew exactly who he was and his motives and his behaviors.
And he has such a pivotal role in not being a major role or having a major storyline. He has such a pivotal role in that movie.
Yeah, but then everyone that enters the scene.
Correct, you know, correct.
The young schoolgirl, the, you know, the ex-girlfriend. There's just...
And everything is not what it seems. Mm-hmm. And I think this is really a true thriller in some senses because the stakes keep getting higher and the walls just keep closing in.
Yeah, and I think there's a good portion of the movie which is simply about back-to-back-to-back people showing up at the house, you know, different people showing up at the house to meet this Kamato's son. And I just felt exhausted for this poor mother because, you know, she has to offer, like, coffee and cake to every one of them because they're just, every scene goes from the time somebody comes to the next time that somebody else comes to the next time that somebody else comes. And I physically felt exhausted for this poor woman.
Well, she had a hard time. I mean, you know, one of the things that the movie does very well is it depicts the realities of what it must be like to cope with somebody who is in a comatose state. And again, it's something that you don't see a lot in film. I mean, unless it's about that subject matter. This wasn't necessarily about that, but those scenes were so well done that you felt her, the work and the difficulties and the hope that you have when somebody is in that state. Really great stuff.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I hope this movie gets a commercial release. And this movie is not to be confused with another movie called Mother, which was released about 3-4 years ago. And it was about a mother who would go to any length to protect her son who might have committed a crime.
Also a good movie.
Also an excellent movie. I think that was a Korean movie, if I'm not mistaken.
I think it was, yeah. Okay, and then the last movie of the day, which was Hunt for the Wilder People, directed by one of my favorite people, Taika Waititi, who this last year did What We Do in the Shadows, which was, I think, my favorite movie of 2015. So I was very excited to see this one. This is a spunky orphan and his gruff guardian are forced to flee after a series of misunderstandings send them both into the wilderness as mismatched fugitives. It stars Sam Neill and featuring a hysterically funny performance by newcomer Julian Dennison. Like I said, directed by Taika Waititi, who some of you may know better from Flight of the Conchords. So Joe, what did you think of this one?
Yeah, it's a quirky Antipodean comedy. It's got that kind of down under humor to it, which I like a lot. There's a very British sensibility to some of the gags that were in there. Yeah, the movie is overly quirky for me. I'm not sure if it taps more into the Flight of the Conchords humor versus the What We Do in the Shadow humor, which was, you know, a lot more obvious and skitty to me. This movie was quirky, but I couldn't help but have fun. And I think, you know, the Sam Neill performance and the young boy, I forget the name of the actor here,
Julian Dennison
had just a a really wonderful chemistry that made the movie work. I think ultimately it did kind of overcook with this, you know, crazy madcap ending. But at the same time, that stayed true to the spirit of the film. So it didn't feel out of place in the way that I think it could have otherwise done. I actually had a lot of fun with this one.
Yes, Dee.
Yeah, I liked it, but I did not love it. It kind of wore out its welcome for me very early on. I mean, it really starts off very cute. The first half hour of the movie is brilliant. And then I think the movie kind of kept circling around the same issue over and over again about, you know, this kid and his, you know, adopted uncle and them going off into the bush, you know, to have their adventure. And that adventure kind of seemed pointless because the same things were happening. The same people were following him. And it was just going round in circles over and over again. So it kind of wore out its welcome for me a little bit. And, you know, it is a charming movie. There is an artificiality to the movie because, you know, everybody speaks and talks a particular way that, you know, I don't think real people do, but that's okay. That's fine. Movies do that all the time. I just wish the movie was maybe half an hour shorter and somebody had been a little bit more judicious with not avoiding it from becoming as precious as it did. And then there's that last scene in the movie which just should be excised immediately. It does not belong in this movie. It just drags it down. It's some kind of horribly overly sentimental thing which doesn't belong in this movie. But anyway, that's my opinion.
So I agree with most of what you say, Yassi, but I did like that last scene because it tied it up very nicely for me. I mean, the opening scenes of that New Zealand you know, topography, the geography is just stunning, and that music that plays. I agree with you. I think, again, this is almost like a movie of two halves. I certainly enjoyed the first half way more than the second half, and I love this director-writer. I think, like you, though, Joe, I did enjoy it probably a little bit more than Yazdi because I think he brings this wonderful, unique point of view on life. Which
it's
certainly
deliberately bizarre.
Yeah, it's quirky and bizarre, and I didn't mind that. I mean, there are certain bits in here that are a bit little bit, you know, Thelma and Louise. It's a little bit of The Revenant. I mean, it's kind of like everything thrown in. But what I do admire it for is it manages some really difficult topics and subject matter very lightly. And again, without using manipulation, because there are many points in the movie that raise these quite difficult topics about fostering children, you know, family life, what happens. And it's managed so well. It's managed so nicely. And then Yazdi, I kind of enjoyed the coming back to things again, because that was almost like the game for me, right? That kind of created some of the fun when we kept seeing the same people coming around again and again and again. So I thought it was a nice coming of age type movie. Again, very unusual, but lovely to see Sam Neill. What a great performance.
Tonally, it reminded me of the movie from a few years ago, which I really liked. You guys, not so much, but it was Submarine. Do you remember that one? Ugh. Richard Ayoade?
Yes. Oh, yeah. God.
Well, but it has that kind of deliberate
quirkiness
to it. And like I say, I think that could cross over into Precious, which clearly it did for you, Yazdi. Yeah. From time to time, this stuff can annoy me, but from time to time, it just clicks and maybe it's, you know, just that X factor that I can't put my finger on, but it kind of worked for me.
I mean, and you know, this has now become a legitimate trope in movies, you know, because there have been so many movies now about lost men who somehow connect with kids and they develop this unusual friendship and each kind of lands up helping the other one out. Most recently, we saw it in Demolition.
Yes.
There was a movie called Mud with Matthew McConaughey and these two boys. There have been many, many, many stories about men who are lost, who connect, who kind of foster a younger kid, and they develop this relationship and they land up helping each other. So within the constraints of that, this does bring something new. So good for them.
Yeah.
So.
End of day one.
Yes. It's been a long day.
Yeah, we did well. Five movies covered. And again, if you check out the Tribeca schedule, there is the opportunity to come see some of those movies. So if you're in the New York area or even close by, just check the schedule. You know, there's so much to this film festival this year. Several hundred movies. So
it's impossible to choose. Even as we're looking at the schedules, it's impossible to choose which one you want to go to.
Absolutely.
Okay. Let us know what you think. We are posting along with Instagram. We finally have our Instagram account off the ground. So moviewallers.com/Instagram, or rather the other way around, instagram.com/moviewallers if you want to check us out. And if you have the app, just look for Moviewallers and you'll find us there. twitter.com/moviewallers, facebook.com/moviewallers, and of course the main website. Until tomorrow, we'll give you our day two update from Tribeca. Too many movies, too little time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.